It is Saturday, January 31st, 2008, 10:06 a.m. on the Central Coast of California. Today on Geek Speak, geek news and a bit about Santa Cruz geeks.
The bandwidth for geekspeak.org is provided by GNI, gnihosting.com.
Welcome to Geek Speak. This is Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. In the Arum with me, we have a whole bunch of geeks. We have Drew Meyer, Director of Storage Product Marketing at Netgear.
Good morning, Lyle.
How are you, Drew? It's been a while since you've been on Geek Speak.
It has been. I've been a little busy these days.
So you changed jobs and you're liking your new thing?
Yeah, it's a great thing. It's way more on the consumer electronics side. I was at the CES show earlier this year, and we've got products that are growing in this economy, so that's a really lucky position to be
in. That's a good thing. I was really surprised to hear that Netgear was not this behemoth that I thought it was. It's actually kind of a small company.
No, it's kind of the world's largest startup, the way it works, but about 500 people and almost, about $600 million in revenues.
And a good social scene. I mean,
fun stuff. I mean, the toys that we have at work, compared to where I've been working in the past with large enterprise storage devices, you don't really take those home and show your mom what it does. But now I can actually tell her.
Because a lot of the stuff you're talking about is going into the home and dealing with the media of the world of, well, our personal life.
Smack dab in the middle of the convergence of home networks and entertainment networks, like connecting your TV to your computer network so you can watch your photos on your television in your living room.
Having a device that has all your music and streaming it to your radio without turning a computer on, all that stuff. Yeah. Well, it sounds like a whole topic for a Geek Speak show, which we'll do soon, I'm sure. We also have Ben Jaffe. He's a freelance media dude. Morning, Ben.
Good morning. How's it going?
I'm good. And yourself?
Doing pretty well.
Good. And we also have Miles Elam. He's a student, programmer, political junkie, and the user of a Pentium 2. Hi, Miles.
Good morning.
And proud of it today. Huh?
Talk about retro.
That's such a good machine. I really wish I had one.
So, Miles, that machine's what? How old is that? As old as Geek Speak?
It came out in 1998, actually. It's older than Geek Speak.
Actually, no, Geek Speak started in 98.
That's when really?
Started. Yeah.
Okay.
It's just,
older than me.
Start until 2000. So,
why are you using a Pentium 2, Miles?
Yes.
You have your phone in your pocket, which is more powerful.
No, the phone is not more powerful. The phone is as powerful as the laptop. Or you could say the laptop is only barely more powerful than my cell phone, but, much the same.
Why are you using it? Tell us again.
Because my laptop screen is busted.
And you're using what operating system on that piece of Dell hardware, is it?
It's Zubuntu. It's a lightweight version of Ubuntu.
And it runs better than, say, Windows or Mac OS would?
I would not try Mac OS on this. I wouldn't expect the driver support to work.
Mac OS would
There's no way it would work.
And I don't think XP would work even. But 98 works, weren't you?
XP, 98? No, yeah, you're right. 256 megs of RAM. I had to install this when it only had 128 megs of RAM.
That machine was designed for Windows 98. I mean, come on.
You could use 3.1. That would be really cool if you were using 3.1.
No, I used Windows 98. That was fine. I had to install on 128 megs of RAM. That's what the laptop came with. And I had two 256 meg DIMMs, laptop DIMMs at home from my old PowerBook G4. So I'm like, oh, great. I can go to 512. That would be totally great. For some reason, it wasn't working. I look up the specs on it. Turns out the laptop will not accept DIMMs larger than 128 megs of RAM. I actually had to buy a 128 meg DIMM.
That's just sad. Let's move on. Let's go to do some geek news. Sean Patrick Teo, if you want to join us, I'll introduce you in a minute, but if you want to join us with the news and just make a comment, please feel free to do so.
Will do.
All right. You got a nice radio voice. Let's start with Ben. Go for it.
Morning. So Google accidentally, I assume this was an accident, announced their G Drive by releasing some code that had references. And we've seen this with Apple and, the rumor sites all jump on and everything, but this is kind of exciting. So back in 2006, they came out with this thing called Platypus, and I think it was in Google Labs, or it was very, very alpha. And then they took it away. And that was much like a G Drive, where you could store files up on their servers in the clouds, so they actually, there are a couple pieces of code that have popped up that have pretty definite references to this G Drive, like G G drive category equals quote online files backup and storage. Like, how can you mistake that?
Because right.
that comes directly.
So basically, you're talking about a product that will probably have a client application that you put stuff in or watch a folder, and it will duplicate that to Google's systems. Mm-hmm. And in fact, this kind of thing has already been happening for a while because you can actually get a Firefox plugin that will take your Gmail account and actually allow you to upload content to it in the mm-hmm. same similar way.
Kind of hack around it.
Yeah.
And
of course, Gmail is what, like at 2 gigs or something like that, that you currently have storage, or is it bigger at this point?
I think it grows.
It
as
grows
you,
every day kind of thing. You never really know what the
terminal is. You can watch the number moving up.
But then, okay, thanks for that.
Yeah.
We'll be watching it, of course. Well, Drew, hi.
Good morning. So in Japan, you can now paint your house and block the Wi-Fi signals from coming in or out. They've released a new kind of paint that has aluminum iron oxide inside of it, which interferes with precisely the frequency that Wi-Fi networks run at, so that you can't either pirate internet from your neighbor or drive down the street, you know, war drive and pick up somebody's internet right out of their house.
So instead of dealing with making your home wireless, like, secure somehow, just paint the entire house so that it doesn't operate outside.
Yeah, and, you know, I suppose you'd have to paint right over the windows, too.
Yeah, I was gonna
make sure all
that.
The doors cracks are sealed. I don't really know what the point is, but, you know, it's a story from Japan. So when it comes to tech, who knows what they're thinking sometimes.
But basically, it's a big Faraday cage using paint.
Yeah, exactly. If you're this worried about it, take your wireless router and just use hardwire.
Right, right. And that's a lot safer. The other thing, though, is with paint like this, if you can buy it in the U.S., it's actually a convenient thing if you've got a noise problem. If you've, you know, if you've got your microwave, on the other side of your microwave, you've got your office, and you're always having wireless problems, paint the wall in between, you're done.
Yeah, or paint the microwave.
Or paint the microwave.
Or paint your head, you know.
Forget tin hats. Shave your head and paint. Nice. Miles, hi.
Hi. I have a story about the smallest type that you could possibly have. You know, we talk about 14-point or 12-point or, you know, 8-point being the smallest, you know, sort of legible. IBM really pushed the envelope a few years back by typing out the word IBM in 17 xenon atoms.
That's small.
That's very small. And a lot of people were regarding...
That was years ago.
Yes. And a lot of people were regarding that as approaching the smallest we could go, that a single atom could at most represent one bit.
And the only argument that I would have about that is that xenon actually has a lot of electron and protons. It's a, you know, heavy item. You could actually go higher up the scale, right? You could start using lighter and lighter atoms. But that would be it, right? One pixel per atom. Right.
Well, it turns out Stanford University... is thinking smaller than we are. They have worked it out where they encoded the letters S and U onto a size so small it's the equivalent of 35 bits per electron. What they're working with is you fire...
Wait.
Yeah.
How much data per electron?
35 bits.
That's a lot of data per electron. Wait, how can...
Now, to give a point of reference for bits, bytes... 35 bits is...
35 zeros and ones, basically. Zeros right. or ones.
Right. So right. that would be a... you could encode a number between zero and, I would guess, somewhere around 64 billion.
Right. And if you use like a simple ASCII...
Or 128
could,
billion?
4 bits is an alphanumeric character.
Mm-hmm.
So
each byte is...
Wait a minute.
Bits.
I don't get it. Are the bits encoded as positive and negative charges on this atom?
No, it's on the electron.
No, if it was a positive and negative, that would only be a single bit per electron.
This right.
is 35 bits
so
per electron.
How do you put multiple charges on a single atom?
Or a single electron.
Well, they're also...
Well, the electron can't change its charge.
We're talking about... You know when we talked about... quarks and things have different flavors and spins and colors.
Holy
all
smokes.
Those different attributes. Those are actually mathematical constructs of the particle. So what I'm assuming that they're doing is they're saying we can set some of these mathematical properties as long as we don't really know where the electron is.
First of all, they were doing this experiment. They were doing this experiment in a room that was effectively vibration proof, a truly isolated environment.
They have really good paint.
What they're
it's
doing
really good tweezers, man. I don't know how they do this.
They're encoding the S and the U from the interference patterns formed by quantum electron waves mm-hmm. off the surface of the sliver of copper.
Yeah.
So when you fire off, let's say, a laser off of it, you get this hologram of the data coming off of it.
So you fire a laser hologram at it, you then see a 3D hologram of S and U
for Stanford University.
So to get, I don't want to get too far into quantum mechanics here, but But everyone knows what an interference pattern is with lasers, and that's how you
make everyone knows what an interference pattern is in a pond. In general, you drop a rock in a pond, you have the ripples.
So electrons actually have interference patterns. You can imbue them with interference patterns, and that's how we get too detailed in. It's a great discussion of why an electron's both a wave and a particle. But you know what? For the radio, let's not do that. Thank you, Miles, for that very small bit of information. I appreciate it.
Miles, is there any practical application here?
A storage. That would
besides
be the
pride.
Most, that would be the best data storage possible. I mean, you wouldn't be able to get deeper.
Or for that matter, if you had quantum entanglement, if you had some type of way.
Encryption
of,
is good.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, encryption or communication lines.
Yeah.
If you can get the maximum amount of information in the smallest area.
Right. That is the maximum amount of information you could possibly store in this universe.
Density.
So what is the density? Well, let's talk about it from a data storage perspective. Do you know the density? Does the article talk about it?
Well, that's what that 35 bits per electron is a unit of density.
I know, but can we get some perspective on how much you could hold in a cubic centimeter? Is that what you talk about in hard drives?
No, I mean...
Oh, geez. Cubic centimeter.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
The scale is so huge right there.
Yeah, you're talking about all the storage space for every computer and hard drive on the planet.
Right, in a cubic centimeter.
In a cubic centimeter.
That's good storage density is all I'm saying. All right, let's move on.
I'm not worried about losing any business over this quite yet.
I wouldn't be either, considering that you could... Yeah. Let's not get into that. Also, you don't exactly know where your storage is because
lost it. Wait, no, there it is. No, it's gone again.
Right, this is not the works of Shakespeare. This is
you've ruined my entire library. And once you've read it too, it's gone. Okay, let's move on. Ben, we had a Trojan story for Macintosh last week. It's another one.
Really briefly.
Just a reminder.
Just don't go to torrent sites and download files and assume that they're not going to be malicious. Because shortly after the first one, which was in pirated a copy of iLife, iWork. Like a couple days later, we found out that there's another one going around, which is in pirated copies of Photoshop, or what appear to be pirated Photoshop copies. Anyway, so yeah.
So basically, if you're on a Mac and you want to get software, don't do it from a BitTorrent site. And I would say from Windows as well. It's very dangerous.
Yeah,
what you're basically saying is, let's bypass all my security protocols and install an application I don't know where it came from.
Yeah, and it's also important to know that it's not exploiting your computer. It's exploiting you. It's making you type in your username and password, and you're giving it directly authorization to do whatever it wants to do, right?
It's
you're just assuming
exactly.
You're just assuming it's not malicious. So
yeah, you are the Trojans letting the Greeks into your gates.
Exactly. So don't trust everything you see. If you're on a Mac, don't assume that you're not gonna have a problem.
Okay. Thank you very much for that update, Miles. Let's talk a little bit about the speaking of security and theft and all that stuff. Facebook ID theft.
Right. This is something that people don't necessarily think about. They think of Facebook as, oh, here's a way to get together with my friends. Sometimes you'll hear in the news people worrying about sexual predators, which incidentally turns out from a study that isn't an issue any more than the real world is. However, you do have the issue of identity theft and fraud through that way. Normally, people think of identity theft as someone goes dumpster diving to find your old credit card applications and
right.
The like.
Right, social security number.
Right. Or you think of a scam as someone gets a piece of spam and tries to get a whole bunch of money out of a Nigerian prince who's exiled from his country. Here, you have someone taking over a Facebook ID and changing the password so the original user cannot get back into their account, and then calling for help, saying, oh my God, I'm stuck in a foreign country. I need money wired to me.
Right.
Please send it to this account. Nothing is working. And so you're seeing a request for help with a picture of your friend next to it,
right?
Giving it a sense of authenticity, of a feeling of weight to it. And a person who worked at who works at Microsoft had this happen to him, and had a coworker look at it and say, "What's going on?" And had the person who hijacked their account try to confirm, saying, "No, it's me. Really, I'm here. I'm in London. I need this money now. I got mugged. I don't have any money," and extorted, or I wouldn't say extorted. I guess
sure, it's extortion.
Sure, tricked his friend into sending $1,200.
Wow!
Just right off the bat.
So, and all that happened here is that the Facebook ID was just compromised. They mm-hmm. guessed the password, maybe, whatever
right.
it was.
And it's exacerbated by the fact that Facebook does not have like a phone number you can call. They were not monitoring the email abuse reports closely. The only reason that he was able to get his account shut down and get his and try to get his account back was because he knew someone who knew someone who worked for Facebook.
Interesting.
That he actually had an in so someone could take
So what take we're basically talking about, the reason why this is kind of interesting, I mean, this why this is so affecting people is that people's social networks are becoming very real online. So you've got a situation where you really do react and interact with somebody completely online, and all you really know about them is how they type. That's the only real personal attribute of that. Everything else is just stored on the system.
Mm-hmm.
So it does make sense. It's a very easy way to pretend like you're someone else. And if in, in real life, if you were to put on the mask of another person perfectly, you could get away with a lot.
Right. Now, in Facebook's defense, they have millions of users.
Right.
They don't have infrastructure to be able to take in phone calls, like a support line. They can't.
So what I would suggest is if you do – I mean, one way to test this, of course, is that they've got pretty good features for recording video. And even if you only have an audio system, you can record video through the Flash interface and just get audio. And you could record it, and that, and then you can probably recognize the person, assuming you actually know the person in real life. I have some people in my – well, my Twitter account that I don't actually know who they – I haven't met them in person. Anyway, interesting. Thank you very much for that.
Hold on.
Yeah, Sean, please.
Are you saying that you would actually send $1,500 to someone who you just might happen to be an acquaintance with on Facebook?
No, this is
without
this
calling that person and being like, "Hey, you know, are you really lost? Did you really get mugged?"
If Miles all of a sudden on Facebook noted me and said, "Hey, I'm, you know, stuck in Watsonville and I don't have any money.
What
can you come
saying,
pick me up?"
But why?
I wouldn't ever call. I wouldn't call him first or anything. I would simply, you know, through Facebook, respond to him.
But
so as long as it's reasonable that my friend is in that situation, why wouldn't I not?
Well, because you're going to pick up Miles, and if he's not there, then you'll be like, that's
right, but that's
and then you'll call it.
That would still be inconvenient
money
for me. It would still be, you know, it would be something I would do for a friend.
Yeah.
Right, but this is also assuming this was a fellow Microsoft employee. You have fellow employees, coworkers that you may be close with, that you see every day, that you've seen every day for years, that you have a close personal relationship with, but you don't have their phone number, mm-hmm. other than their, for example, their work extension.
I think $1,200, yeah, for me, that would be, I'd be calling the person before I sent $1,200 to someone, right?
Assuming you had the number.
But that's because that kind of money
the
for
mugger
me is
stole
not
their
common
phone.
Right.
They're in an internet cafe. It's plausible,
well, wait, how,
but then, you know, Sean,
send,
I'm with you. If someone pings me for $1,200 out of the blue with a slightly fishy story. Am I going to whip out my card and send it?
I just realized, Lyle, someone steals our phone with their Facebook app on it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Total connection. Should lock your phone down. Okay. I get that, Drew. I mean, and Sean, I totally understand that. But
at some point, when are you going to be responsible for your actions, right? Isn't that what we're boiling down to?
I guess the perspective is if I take over someone's Facebook account, I know all the communication between them and all their friends for the last 3 months. I have that relationship.
So
I know what that relationship
mm-hmm.
is. I can reference my, you know, the person's wife, the person's kids, the person's job. I can, and if you steal the account and go, "Oh my gosh, he's actually in Europe right now," and then you steal the account, you're like, "Okay, the person's in Europe. All his friends know he's in Europe." Boom.
Well, is that any different than the stories you read about some guy maintaining two households, one in New York and one in New Jersey, and nobody knows for 10 years, and he's got two families?
But when you say, like, what about personal responsibility, I do worry about that, because this is talking about human compassion towards one another. This is what it's preying upon. So I don't think that it's – I think that the only bad person is the person who hijacked the account. It's a question of how do we deal with it?
The trick is here also is that we're turning off all of these intellectual cues that are as human beings we have. We have an amazing intelligence when it comes to emotion. Most humans do, right?
On the contrary,
so when
we
you're
interacting with the cues that we have.
I understand
you see
that
a picture
but,
of the person.
But the cues of when you interact with someone in person, you know that person's someone you know. You can also sometimes detect lies, you know when falsehoods are happening. Now, of course, there are people that are very good at this that, you know, flim-flam people and such, but in most respects, when you say my social network is now completely removed from all those clues, I will no longer be a human in some sense. I'm interacting in a different way. That's not being a social human in a lot of ways.
I think all I'm saying, and I hope all users or all listeners, I'm sorry, not
yeah,
users,
yeah.
listeners will just verify if anyone ever asks them either through their IM account or their Facebook account that, you know, through other sources than simply saying, "Oh, yeah, I'll cut you a check. How much do you need? $1,500?
Right.
Okay, you know."
If you're ever going to be put on the spot and have any risk associated, you've got to be more sure than just an icon on a computer screen.
Right.
I agree. Well, let's – I mean, we could do some more news, but I think we should go ahead and start talking with Sean a bit about Santa Cruz Geek. So Sean Patrick Terrio is
Terrio.
Terrio. Good. Yeah. I did it. Yay.
Tario,
Sean Patrick
Terrio
is our guest today, and Sean is one of the people that started up a very lively group of geeks getting together in Santa Cruz about a year and a half ago or so. The Santa Cruz Geeks Google group is the best way to join it if you're in Santa Cruz and such and would like to. And in October, Sean wrote to response, "Why are you a geek?" He wrote a bunch of stuff, but one of the things he closed with, I like quite a bit, Sean, if you don't mind me quoting you. "I'm a geek because I've always believed technology would become the core of the new economy, and I love understanding how this stuff all works that seemingly looks like magic to 99% of the rest of the world." I like it. Yep. I like that question. I kind of want to pose anything else for, you know, let me ask that question again in a different way. What is a geek?
That is a great question, and probably one that is subjective to everyone who answers it. Mm-hmm. For me, a geek is just someone who tries to understand how everything around them ties together and helps them just do what they do on a regular basis. You can have geeks who aren't even computer geeks. You can have geeks that are library geeks, or you can have geeks that are construction geeks. People who just want to understand the whole system and the integral theory around what it is that's going on around them.
Yeah, I've always kind of put the stance for myself about what a geek is. It's a person that has a thirst for knowledge that overrides their thirst for being cool. So if you investigate and want to know something and you don't care about looking like an idiot doing so,
oh man,
you're a geek.
Why does it have to be an equation, either or, right? I mean, I think people who know stuff are cool.
Yeah, Drew and I are pretty cool.
Yeah, right. Speak for yourself, man.
Well, yeah. When GeekSpeak was running for a few years and Miles and me and Sean Cleveland took over it from the guys that started up Cruise.io.
And John Tracy.
One of the things that happened with my father, who's running the station at the time, he said, wait, geeks are like cool and kind of sexy. I was like, yeah, now they are. But when I talk about geek, I don't necessarily think that, I mean, you can definitely be cool, but in general, it's about going, I want to ask a stupid question and know the, and I want to get the answer of it. I want to investigate something and be so excited about that, whatever it is, gardening, whatever it is, that you want to geek out on it. You want to, like, get the nitty-gritty on it, and you don't care if you look like a boob doing so. But
right, like the conversations you guys just had for the last 20 minutes.
Like
right.
We do every day. Every right.
We tend to filter our audience that way pretty effectively. You know, people say to us, I have no idea what you talk about, but I love listening to the show. And
it's true.
They're geeks, right?
That's right.
That's great. Yeah,
they're learning.
Absolutely. All right. We're going to get to our conversation in just a second. I just need to do some station news. What the heck am I reading here? Oh. It's a love-hate relationship. Love your cars. Hate it when they break. You'll love the car guys and hate to miss them when Click and Clack give their advice on things automotive every Saturday right after Geek Speak and Sunday morning at 9 a.m. right here on Central Coast Public Radio. You are listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP. This is Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. In the air room with me, I have Drew and Ben and Miles, and our guest is Sean Patrick Terrio, and we are talking about Santa Cruz Geeks, what it is to be a Santa Cruz geek. If you are and you want to chat about that, please feel free. I'm going to try to tie down the phones to just that topic for a little bit. The phone numbers are 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. So this group that you helped create, Sean, with like three other people, it's been going for about a year and a half or so. And in that time, what's happened in the last year because of this group? What's going on?
2008 was a phenomenal year. While the financial industry around us was crashing, we really focused on just trying to build a authentic community of geeks who wanted to help each other and learn about each other and figure out what infrastructure they could help build to primarily just bring more business into their lives with people that they liked doing business with. I'm an entrepreneur, and Saul Lipman is an entrepreneur, and Margaret Rosas is an entrepreneur, and David Beach is an entrepreneur, and we all were kind of sitting around, and we've all come to the realization at some point in our life that we would rather do business with people we liked than people we didn't like, and we would rather do business with people that were like a couple blocks away than having to drive up to San Francisco or drive over the hill to do business.
Right.
And so we just sat down one day and said, well, what can we do to help make that a reality? And we said, well, why don't we just start having dinners once a month and start inviting other people we know who are of like mind? And see what happens out of that. So we did in November of 2007 was our first one. And out of that, we spawned all sorts of jellies. Jellies is a term for co-working days, essentially, where a company will simply say, you know, on this day of the month, anyone and everyone can just come to our office and just work out of our office and have free Wi-Fi and whatnot. We've had Freelance Camp. I don't know if you guys have heard about Freelance Camp, but it was an event back in the summer, the late summer,
where we had Shane Perlman and Margaret Rosas put it on, and they opened it up, and we had about 150 freelance artists, freelance developers, freelance workers in Santa Cruz, and even from down in Monterey Bay, who actually showed up at 9 a.m. And it was a, I don't know if you guys have ever heard of the open conference theory, right? But you show up and you set your own agenda for the day. So
everybody that participates comes together, and the first thing they do is plan what the event will actually be.
Exactly.
Very cool experience. I participated in the public media camp, which was later.
Right, exactly.
Really, really a wonderful experience. That one, that sounds too large for the Next Space. Where was it done?
It was actually at Next Space.
It was at Next
Space? Actually, no. Freelance camp was at
the Mall, right?
Museum of Modern.
That was a big event. Yeah. So basically we're talking, it sounds like it's a bit about business as well as being a geek.
Well, I think business is just a natural conversation that comes out of that. When you sit down and you're having a meal with someone, you're getting into more than just, what is it that you do? You know, what's your business title? And then moving on to the next person. You're actually forced to kind of sit there with someone for an hour.
Right.
And so you start getting into, what are your passions? You know, how many kids do you have? What are the different projects that you've enjoyed working on over the years? And through those conversations, things happen like 12seconds.tv. Saul Lippman and David Beach were sitting down and talking about what they were passionate about. And Beach said, hey, I've got this idea. And Saul's like, well, I like cool ideas. And so, next thing you know, they were planning 12seconds.tv.
And 12 seconds is basically Twitter for video.
It's actually what we like to say is Twitter is 12 seconds without the video.
Nice.
Right. But 12 seconds is video Twitter.
Okay. So first off, not everybody knows what Twitter is. So just describe what 12 seconds is.
Right. So essentially from your phone, if you have any kind of video recording device, you record 12 seconds worth of video and you upload it to 12 seconds and it immediately broadcasts it to anyone and everyone who chooses to follow you. So you can create your own page. And every time, I have a BlackBerry, and I've got a little three-year-old, and so my family follows me, and so I take, cute snippets of him doing cute stuff, and that gets immediately sent out to all my family, so they can see what he's doing.
And it's just a couple of buttons for you.
Exactly.
It's just and it's a easy buttons. For them to see right. it.
If you actually go to 12seconds.tv/Eurotario, you'll see the 12-second vid that I took about 20 minutes ago when we first got in here.
Sorry, give us that URL again.
It's 12seconds.tv/EURotario.
I'll put that on the GeekSpeak website right now. That's a lot easier.
Yeah.
And actually, on 12 Seconds, I'm Lyle, the account Lyle, so if you want to see the one video I posted. But it's a fun experience. I didn't know how – it's actually quite interesting to follow people on that, just seeing 12 seconds of their life.
Really so back up, 12 Seconds is a local company founded by a couple of geeks out of this group, and it's surviving, it's getting funding, it's growing. What's going on?
So it's a
not
local...
to be a promo for these guys, but,
sure.
It's still interesting.
Well, we can promote them. There's nothing wrong with promoting local companies. So 12seconds.tv is a local company, started probably around June-ish. They have about four full-time employees. Actually, I take that back. No one's full-time. Other than Jacob Noble and Saul Lippman and David Beach and a variety of other people are all working part-time. And it's growing exponentially. So my company, actually my full-time company, is with United Layer, and we manage data center space and have a high-end managed hosting service. So what I was able to do for 12 seconds was able to give them free hosting for a couple of months because I truly saw that they were on to something huge. And I wanted them to be, in our space and in our doors. So as they grew, that we could help them expand from the infrastructure level. So there's a lot of other people in the community that have been helping them. Like Quiddities has helped them build their site out. I'm probably leaving some people out. But yes, they are growing. They won second place at the Crunchies, which is kind of like the...
That's a big deal.
Yeah, it's the Geek Grammys, I guess, is what you could call it. So users from all over the world voted, and they got second place as the best bootstrap startup of 2008.
And one of the things about 12 Seconds, which was interesting, is I started learning about 12 Seconds and seeing it operate prior to knowing it was a Santa Cruz company, which is always a fun experience.
Yeah.
Finding it. So what are a couple other the URLs, if you will, a couple of the companies that are generated from people meeting up for dinners and things, basically?
Sure. So uservoice.com is another really cool one, interesting one, doing really, really well, starting to make some money, which is great news.
Yeah, a friend of mine does that, actually.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Which one?
Actually, it's a friend of a friend, but it's a good friend of a good friend, so.
Yeah, so all those guys are actually good buddies of mine, and if you go on their site, I'm actually, I work with them in some capacity.
Is there beta testing? Strategy.
Ben, would you mind just throwing these URLs up on the contact section of the GeekSpeak site as we're doing this?
Sure.
And Uservoice is uservoice.com. It's that simple, but effectively, we convinced Marcus Nelson and his family to move out here from Wausau, Wisconsin. So he's very happy to have made that move. And Richard White up in San Francisco to move down to Santa Cruz because they both realized that there was a community here that was truly supportive and wanting to help them get their venture up off the ground. And one of the biggest, I don't want to say problems, but one of the biggest stereotypes that Santa Cruz has always had is that we just don't have the talent in Santa Cruz. And the reality is that we have so much talent that it actually has to drive over the hill every day,
right?
To go to work. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Drew, I mean, Drew and I are perfect case studies of that. So 60% of Santa Cruz residents commute over the hill every day to go to work, and they work in the eBays, they work in the Yahoos, they work in all the different companies that are in the Valley and up in San Francisco.
Right.
So we kind of,
and really the only reason is the business is over there.
Right. Exactly.
They could be here instead.
Right. So, I mean, my main agenda in Santa Cruz is getting those businesses started in Santa Cruz.
You know, and that argument we were talking about earlier in the show, I know, you know, Marty Collins, who runs the Digital Media Factory,
right.
And he's been doing that for years now, but his argument has been the entire time, we have a lot of talented movie people here as well.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea being that, and what Marty's trying to do with the Digital Media Factory, and it sounds like it's doing better, maybe we can talk about that for a minute, is say, you know, let's make that stuff happen here. Let's not transport it out. It's a clean business model in that you're not, you know, generating new stuff. The digital factory world is just generating content or just generating new artistic work rather than, you know, gadgets and such that are toxic.
Right.
So what about Marty? And has that happened much this year?
Yeah. All sorts of stuff has been going on with Marty. He's effectively just starting to turn the corner and starting to get support from the city of Santa Cruz, starting to tap into some of the support that he can get from UCSC. There's a lot of new developments going on in town that he's going to be able to leverage and actually tap into and move into. It's going to take some time, likely, but Marty's not holding back. And I would encourage everybody to at least check out his site and see if you can leverage what he's got going on. And that's digitalmediafactory.net.
That'll go up online.
All these URLs we'll put up on geekspeak.org. Yeah.
And
crazy.
Marty is just a phenomenal human being. he's one of my favorite people here in Santa Cruz.
So, Sean, it sounds like despite the doom and gloom and the economic reality of the situation, things are going slowly. Yet Santa Cruz, even though it's geographically isolated, has a tremendous amount of talent. You're working to put them together. We're seeing some results around that. And the city, as we all know, is pretty strapped for cash, but there's an opportunity here to lower the green bottom line that we're all impacting. 60% of us are driving, you know, in some form over the hill, and bring some brain power back to town.
That's exactly it. And it's very interesting because I, as an entrepreneur, when I started getting my feet wet and getting involved here in town about 4 years ago, I really just saw Santa Cruz as a massive opportunity. You had the talent, you have the innovation, you have this beautiful scenery. And there was just lacking infrastructure. There weren't groups and organizations that people could show up to.
Social infrastructure.
Right, social mm-hmm. infrastructure. And now we're just starting to build all those different tools and pieces. Marty with the Digital Media Factory has a great piece. Nextspace is actually a phenomenal example of that. They kind of put a flag in the ground right downtown Santa Cruz and said, look, we've got 11,000 square feet of shared working space. Let's build a community around that. Let's take the Santa Cruz Geek community and all the other organizations in town that wanted to just start taking things seriously.
Nextspace is across the street from the Cooper, across Cooper Street from the Cooper House, and is a shared kind of a commune, if you will, of business people.
It's
a very cool space too.
It's it's a fantastic cutting edge real estate use, reuse of a historic building, by the way.
Well, at least the face.
Yeah. I have not worked there. I would love to work there.
Nextspace is also, I mean, if you're working by yourself, you're a small business person or whatever, and you don't have that scene of being in a business environment, you can actually rent the space, go in there, and have that be your office, and you have all the amenities of an entire infrastructure of a business being there, and yet you're doing your own thing. But what's cool about being there, of course, is that you get to interface with all these other amazing people. So take a look at it. And actually, once a month, I think it's the fourth Friday of every month, the space is open for anybody to come work without paying any dues or anything.
Exactly.
Very cool.
Exactly. So, you know, those are some infrastructure pieces. Peter Cote is actually, who's the new economic development coordinator for the city of Santa Cruz, has done a phenomenal job of making connections here in town. He's also threw up cruzbusiness.com, cruzbusiness.com, to help promote a lot of the local businesses that are taking off and whatnot.
Let's go ahead and take a call because I want to talk to Mary. Mary from Santa Cruz, what's up?
Hi. I have a couple quick short stories to share. First of all, my husband just told me that 55 years ago when he lived in Brooklyn, he was passionate about building model airplanes. And he had original designs, mm-hmm. And he had one which he named the Geek. and it won the state prize for the longest free flight of a model airplane at that time. So that was a pretty early use of the word. And then the second thing I wanted to say is that there's a lot of things I want to do, like use Skype, have my house wirelessly networked, show my photos on TV, and I was just thinking, oh, my God, how am I going to do this? Because once you know, it's easy, but before you know, it's like having a clue. So I was on my way to the library, and I walked through Santa Cruz Bookshop, and I found a book called How to Be a Geek Goddess.
Is it a good book?
It's a great book.
All right, How to Be a Geek. Who's it by?
The author is Christina Tynan Wood. It's brand new, and it covers all of those topics and more.
Very cool. How to Be a Geek Goddess, recommendation from Mary in Santa Cruz. Thank you so much for the call.
Okay.
Okay, bye-bye. If you'd like to call us about being a geek in Santa Cruz, businesses you know about, people you know about, maybe involved with what Sean has been doing, please feel free to give us a call. The phone numbers are 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Again, that's 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-KUSP. So, Sean, keep going, because you had a whole list of things. I know that we've
other 2008 successes. Tell us how this is all working out.
Right. So there's another company, Ridespring.com, who I believe you guys had on.
Yeah, we've had Paul on a few times, actually, a couple times, I think.
Yeah. So Paul, great guy. He's got a company, Ridespring.com, and they've been taking off lately. They've just landed some key accounts with eBay and SAP, I believe. Paul, don't be mad at me if I got that wrong. And
Ridespring specifically is a way for people to easily share their commute. So if you work at a business, a lot of employees, I'm not sure if it still works this way, but it was business-based. So if you are working over the hill with some people, the company says, here's the system, and everyone in that company can then go and say, well, I need a ride from here to here, and basically the system allows to connect them up so that they can ride together.
So it's actually a whole lot more powerful than that.
Oh, good. Well, that's what the first incarnation was. So
what he's doing now is allowing companies to aggregate all of their employees, and employees will say, excuse me, how they actually got to work that day. Mm-hmm. Did they walk to work? Did they take a bike to work? Did they carpool? Did they actually drive in the carpool? And you accumulate points over any given month. And at the end of the month, they have a drawing. So the more points you have, the more likely you are to win. And then they have companies like REI and other businesses that are trying to promote the sustainable lifestyle who will give gifts. We'll give gift certificates, maybe dinners, whatever it might be.
So it's an incentive program and kind of a way to bring up the awareness of how you're traveling.
That's
and
correct.
Be on top of that.
Yep.
And so that's very cool because, of course, that's the motivation factor that you actually need to participate in.
Right.
Everyone knows they can carpool.
Right.
But this allows a system that supports that. That's great.
And companies actually love this, too, because they get hard metrics. So they can then promote and, you know, their propaganda, or not propaganda, their PR that they can put out there is, you know, we saved, you know, 10,000 tons of CO2 by promoting, you know, green driving to our employees.
Because in the beginning, this is how many people were driving, and after our program, this is how it changed.
Exactly.
Cool.
Don't forget, too, there's value for the employees in that. When I was at NetApp, which has been now this year was rated the number one company in the world to work for on the Fortune magazine list, in the company places like Adobe and Google, but they provide transportation services and even credit accounts for employees, which lowers the cost of your commute and gives you, you know, in my case, it'd give me 2 hours a day back.
Right.
So there's no price for that.
Yeah, that's true.
Right. There's actually, ironically enough, there's another company in town called Zazengo. And that's Zazengo.com. And they do another very similar type of service in that they aggregate data from user-generated content saying, I recycled 50 milk cartons today, or I went and cleaned up the beach today. And then it starts taking all that data and matching it with other people who have done similar services so that you can see on net in Santa Cruz, you know, how much total waste was cleaned up, or how many total pounds of CO2 was cleaned up, or whatever it might be. So they're also a very interesting local company.
What was that URL again?
Z-A-Z-E-N-G-O, Zazengo.com.
And these are all up on the GeekSpeak website right now, with the exception of Zazengo, which will
publish
soon.
Okay,
yeah, I just published.
All right, great. Thank you so much for doing that, Ben.
Yeah, and then there's another one, RoomQuick.com, which is in alpha mode. That's a project by Steve Terry and Galen O'Connell out of Nextbase, ironically enough. And that's hopefully going to be aggregating different hotels in town. So I, as a customer, I walk into a hotel and it's booked. Instead of that person saying, sorry, we've got nothing for you, what they can do is immediately put into a system
that contacts all the other hotels in the area and says, hey, we've got someone here. If you have a room available, the first person to reply gets that customer. And then the person who, the company or the hotel that did that referral actually gets a referral fee for it. It's, you know, very simple system, and it's a win-win for everyone around. And then the last one is Product Ops, which is Bob Cagle, who had a software company downtown in the late 90s that was extremely successful. He essentially said, look, you know, I've done it before. I'll do it again with all this talent reemerging here. So he's got a really cool company that's helping companies build the infrastructure and the product support and services around what they do.
Great. Well, thanks for that. And this sounds like a lot of research to find out exactly how the Santa Cruz Group's affected. Is this a report you did for someone?
I compiled this in probably about an hour before our last Geek Dinner, which was, I think, two Thursdays ago. And I actually put it up onto my blog, seantario.com, seantario.com. It's probably like the second or third one down there. It's called 2008.
Again, geekspeak.org's today's show. We'll link to it.
And but, if I were interested in getting more involved in this geek scene here in Santa Cruz, what should I do, Sean?
Go to santacruzgeeks.com. And then we also have a Google group. So if you go to Google and you type in Santa Cruz Geeks Google group, the Google group will pop up. We're in the process of merging the two together.
And the next event?
That's a great question. It's on the site. I don't have it in front of me.
Better yet, visit the site.
Well, yeah. Drew, you could look that up if you wanted to find out what it was. Let's go ahead and take Melinda from Santa Cruz. Hi.
Hi there. I had a question. I want to build a website, and I heard there's a couple. I heard Dreamweaver's good, but I don't want to buy it at this time. So I'm wondering if you can recommend any free website editors that I could download.
WordPress.
What's it called?
WordPress.com. Go to WordPress. Use WordPress.
Are you on a PC or a Mac?
A PC.
Okay.
Yeah.
Don't use WordPress.
Wait a minute. It depends what she wants to do.
Sean, I can fight. Yeah, let's find out. What do you want to do with this website?
Oh, just make a website, just, you know, like a family website or one for photos or, you know.
Something. Yeah, that's a good website solution.
Is it?
Sean, what's a website? I'm sorry. Go ahead. You were going to say.
Yeah, you guys are probably going to be mad at me here, but I'm not a coder. Like, right. I'm not that hardcore of a geek when it comes to software. I've sold software before, and I can do some basic PHP and HTML and whatnot. But all the sites that I've built have been in WordPress. Right. They make it very user-friendly for people who just want to do a static page or just a couple static pages to edit the content after the architecture is built around it. So
Dreamweaver is a great program, but it's for professionals, and it's way overkill for what you need.
Mm-hmm. Well, you can produce a pretty good site with Dreamweaver without
knowing anything.
But
it's going to run you a couple hundred bucks.
Yeah. Melinda, are you a designer?
No, I have a little background in computers, so I'm not, you know, but I'm not that sophisticated.
I would like
to eventually be able to do some cool, you know, Flash or, you know, something like that.
Well, what Sean's suggesting is that you could go and start editing web pages by, like, static web pages. That was what Dreamweaver would be for, right? So you design your setup and you edit and everything, and then Dreamweaver actually has a whole FTP thing built in. You get the files back up the server, and then there's static files, right? And that's cool because it gives you a lot of flexibility, but it's kind of difficult. And then if you want to update stuff, you've got to go back to your Dreamweaver application and run it, and if you don't do it very often. So the kind of takeoff on new content being created online has been the blog systems. And one of those, the premier blog system, if you will, was WordPress. And it basically is an online application that allows you to generate a new web page quickly. And once you've done that, it allows you to post new stories, and it kind of keeps track of things and archives them. Basically, a lot of the blogs out there are actually a WordPress engine. So Sean is saying, don't spend your time with Dreamweaver building static HTML documents. Get a system in place where you start becoming a publisher yourself, and you get your ideas and your photos and all that stuff out there quickly.
Is HTML behind the WordPress, or what code is behind WordPress?
WordPress is built in PHP and outputs HTML and CSS and also XML for RSS feeds.
And so it may take you a little while to, you know, to get pretty proficient at it, but I would highly recommend doing it, because once you are, you can pretty much start creating as many different types of websites that you want.
But you can do everything with that? Like if you wanted to do like a PayPal thing, or if you wanted Flash, or if you wanted a blog, or if you wanted it some sort of a...
You kind of have to add
from the user. You could get all that going.
There's APIs that will allow you to do that, but you're going to want to find somebody who's a professional at it who can help you.
Everything you just listed is the quality stuff that real websites are made of, and most home users don't have.
Right. So if you wanted all those things, each one of those things is going to take, you know, a group of people a few weeks to do. So the web development is actually gets to a level of complexity in the professional side. But from a simple perspective, yes, WordPress has a plugin so that you can make sure you can put Flash movies up in it, and it has a plugin to interface with PayPal. So it's not that hard to turn those things on. But as you get more detailed in how it actually works, you're going to want to do something, and then you're going to have to modify it, and then it becomes really complicated. The other thing I just want to say is you asked about making web pages via some kind of text editor like Dreamweaver. Miles on a Windows machine uses TextPad.
I actually don't do much of development
that.
on the Windows machine.
If you want to participate in our forums and ask that same question, one of us will do some research for you and recommend a good WYSIWYG editor. But I think Sean's suggestion is a pretty good one.
Okay.
All right.
Also, and one other question. Can I ask, if my computer, I have a PC, is running, all of a sudden it's running a lot slower than it used to, is there something I can do at home to kind of, I don't know, either get it going
fine-tune
a little faster?
It.
It's like, it just seems to run slower, off the internet, and every time I load up Windows, it takes forever. And it's going a lot slower than
So,
something I can do?
Yeah, there are some things you can do. I every once in a while just reinstall the operating system and start from scratch. But there's also some cleanup stuff you can do as well. One thing you want to do is you want to take a look at what startup items you have and make sure you've disabled those. So if you've added the Yahoo search bar and the Google search bar, and you have all these system tray stuff running in the right-hand corner, turning those off will help. Other stuff that will help is... do you really need to defragment your drive still in Windows? You do.
Yes.
Yeah.
But
so that will help. It's under System Tools, under Start Menu, System Tools. There's a defragger. I can't remember what it's called exactly.
Google that. There's so many options. We can't do it all on the
I know.
Right
it's
here.
It's a long one as well. Thanks for the call.
Sure, thanks.
All right, bye-bye. So let's talk a bit more about being a geek and what a geek is, because I think that's an interesting aspect of this. This is called the Santa Cruz Geeks Group, and in some sense it's a social and marketing thing, and your perspective on what a geek is pretty much in line with mine. I want to hear kind of, Miles, what's your thought on that?
What is a geek?
Yeah.
It depends on the time scale. 15 years ago, I would have said a geek would have been anyone who's run an internet connection to their home, or a high-speed one, like a dedicated one rather than just a modem.
Because they cared enough to do that.
Right, and today everyone has that. Mm-hmm. That doesn't really change anything. So I guess the definition would be the difference between a geek and a non-geek. A non-geek is someone who uses a computer as a tool to solve a particular problem. A geek is someone who takes a closer look at the technology, looks to see on how the tools work, so that they can examine what problems they could possibly solve with it.
So what would be a nerd?
A nerd would be someone who has a fetish for the technology but doesn't actually look on how to apply it.
Would a geek be someone who actually has different definitions for all these words?
Certainly. But you asked for my opinion on it,
my
opinion.
Yeah, okay. Drew, what about you?
Oh, man. I really get into historic preservation. I really get into energy efficiency stuff. And I like technology stuff. I can't really create it, but I can appreciate it and hopefully interpret what it's useful for people. So to me, it's just somebody who has a passion and is dedicated to that passion strongly enough that they don't let other people, tell them it's not cool, as we were mentioning before.
Yeah.
That's what it's all about. It doesn't matter what it is. I mean, we are all tech geeks typically in this show, but...
Yeah.
We try to branch the show out beyond, and I think that's what's most fun about it.
Yeah, we've done a lot of stuff on the show over the last 10 years that have not been specifically computers, which is what, of course, people think of us. We've talked about gaming, we've talked about coffee, we've talked about digital art, which, of course, to some degrees...
Had robotics on.
We've talked about robotics. I mean, biology, a lot of stuff about bioengineering and stuff.
The rub about tech is being a tech geek will provide you the money to go pursue these other fun passions.
What's up, Sean?
Yeah, so before we kind of... go down the rabbit hole of geekdom. I really want to just mention some of the stuff that UC Santa Cruz is doing these days.
Okay.
Props and hats off to Ryan Coonerty for allowing the process of healing to happen between the UC Santa Cruz and the city. They've had a lot of conflict over the years, debating over taxes and who pays what, when, where, why. But there's been kind of a new era emerging and a new partnership emerging. Peter Cote is also doing a great job with the PPIE program, which is helping to bring entrepreneurial-minded students into the city of Santa Cruz and then making connections for them with other entrepreneurs and businesses.
Sure.
So there's lots of different programs. And then Stephen Bordeaux
and Michael Isaacson, who work in the Bastion School of Engineering, are doing a great job with this business plan competition that's coming up. Mm-hmm. I highly recommend if you're a UC Santa Cruz student, you start looking into that. They have a $10,000 cash prize for the winner, and second place gets $5,000, I think, and third place gets like a grand. So if you have great ideas and you're a UC Santa Cruz undergraduate or graduate student, you can apply to be a part of this, and you'll be seeing some information passed out on campus. I highly recommend you look into it. And so they're starting to make that bridge into the city and starting to leverage the different resources that are available on both sides of the house, because there's a lot of IP that's at UC Santa Cruz that could also be leveraged. We just have this gold mine of a intellectual property house sitting right up on this hill. And for some reason, well, we all know the reasons, but it's just been so hard to bridge that gap. And so that gap is starting to be bridged. And, you know, hats off to my friend Risa Abrams, too, for the work that she did there. She's no longer working there, but she threw a lot of elbows and got people thinking in the right direction. But they're starting to make the changes that they need to be making up there to start leveraging the intellectual property that they have.
Is there anything more going on with tech startups or incubators on the west side? I mean, we've got that commercial space available and the zoning properly for it.
Yeah, who knows what's going to happen with that Delaware project? It's a massive, massive amount of space, and I think Craig French is still trying to figure out exactly what's going to be going in there.
Yeah, in challenging times.
Yeah, yeah.
Sean, Patrick, Trejo, thank you so much for being on Geek Speak today.
Thanks for having me, guys.
To learn more about all the stuff we talked about, just go to the Geek Speak website, look on today's show. Today, of course, is the 31st of January 2009. Lots of links to all the businesses that Sean has mentioned, and, of course, to the Santa Cruz Greeks user group and the website and all that. And, Sean, I hope to be more a part of it, and thank you so much for doing this social.
I hope you guys all get involved, yeah.
Geek Speak on KOSP is supported by Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer and electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KOSP Santa Cruz, and KBDH San Arto, streaming live and podcasting at kosp.org. Geek Speak is a registered service mark of Online Tonight with David Lawrence, and he's used by permission. My name is Lyle Troxell. The Geeks Today. Ben Jaffe is a freelance media dude. Miles Elam is a student program and political junkie. And Drew Meyer is director of storage product marketing at Netgear. Geeks, thank you so much for being here today with me.
Always a pleasure.
Thank you, Lau.
Answering the phones is Rick. Rick answers phones every week. Thank you, Rick, for doing so. And Ben, I know you've got a whole bunch of shows kind of in the hopper for us coming down the pipe. What's going to be happening soon on Geek Speak? We'll be having Adam Savage at the end of the month on
yes.
Geek Speak.
No
yeah.
way.
Yeah.
Are you serious, Ben?
No, that's not me booking that one, but we'll be probably talking about sound on one of our shows. Mm-hmm. We'll be talking about backup solutions. We'll be talking about backup hardware.
Wait a minute. Just Adam Savage?
Yeah, at the end of the month. For KOSP and Geek Speak, my name is Lyle Troxell.